We're holding on Ian Gimel on the base. Three lines from the bottom. We talked yesterday about various cases where you have somebody has an amanus right away, even though they're only one person, and usually, for example, in the case of a midwife, they're not even usually a kosher aide. But we said in the case of the astufi, we said that the parents are believed if it's lauter, also a midwife to say that this child was born first or second, or to say what the yichus of the child is, and as far as the case of the three women in one bed. So continuing on this topic. Neman the Rashi says it's actually the continuation of the Braisa that we started quoting, not just the continuation of the topic. Rashi says it's actually the continuation of the Braisa that the Gemara started quoting yesterday. Neman Bal Mekach Loyma Loze Macharti Loze Ein Macharti Loy Macharti. A store owner or whatever, somebody who has something to sell is believed to say that I sold to this person and not to that one. Meaning, what happens? You have two people arguing, each one saying, you sold it to me, it's mine. As the Gemara will tell us in a minute, we're talking about that he still has the object in his possession. He hasn't given it to either one of them yet. We'll discuss over the next couple of lines. Let's learn a couple of lines and we'll see. But we're talking about that the Bala Mecha, the person who's selling the thing, is you have two people claiming that each one claiming I bought it. You believe him to say that I sold it to this one, not to that one. Yes. Now, when is this talking about? Only when the object is still in his hand. But if it's not in his hands anymore, then we don't believe him. Now, what do we mean? What's the reason behind that? Rashi says like this. As long as the object in his hand is in his hand, he has to be very careful to know who he's selling to. What we're talking about, the Gemara is going to tell us in a minute, we're talking about that both of them gave him money. One of them gave him money, and he agreed to sell it to him, and the other one also gave him money, but he didn't agree to sell it to him. So he's going to have to keep track which one is which, because he's going to have to make sure that he ends up giving the thing to the person who actually paid him, who he actually agreed to sell it to. Otherwise, he'll have the dinim mishapara that we talked about before, which we'll learn much more about in Bava Metzia. The idea that money, we talked many times about the idea that money does not create a kinyan, minatara, only mishicha, we talked about earlier in our assessment. A mishicha, hagbah, whatever, one of the various types of kinyan, create an acquisition in the Talmud. However, the Chachamim did say that if a person took money for something and now he wants to renege on the deal and say, never mind, I still want to keep my thing, here's your money back, the other guy can take him to Beis Din and force him to accept a curse called Mishapara, which says that Beis Din makes him tells him that the Eibishter who paid back the Dera Plaga, the Dera Mabel, and the rest of those famous Rishonim from history will get back at somebody who doesn't keep his word.
So
therefore, this seller has to keep track of who he agreed to sell it to in order to avoid the Mishapara problem.
And if he didn't mention anyone that he was agreeable to, then the guy just took it from his
hand. No, again, nobody took anything yet. That's what we're saying. The thing is still in his hand.
In the seller's hand.
So two people came and gave him money, as the Gemara will say in a second, one Midaite, one Balkar, right? He, as long as the thing is still in his hand and he hasn't given it to one or the other of them yet, he's going to have to be responsible to know which one he's going to have to be giving it to, because again, he has to worry, otherwise he has to be concerned about Mishapara. Therefore, as long as it's in his hands, we can believe him.
So let me ask you a question. I had this case exactly happen to me. I bought an Esrog.
Yeah.
And from someone.
Uh-huh.
And I said, this is the Esrog. I had my on the box. And he sold it to somebody else.
So... Did you give him money?
Did I give him money? I came back to give him the money.
But if you hadn't done anything yet, if it was a dvarim, technically, there is a concept that even if you did the agreement just verbally, then the other guy should honor it. But there's not even mishapara.
She had the answer in my hand.
Okay, but only if the guy agreed on that basis that it's going to be yours.
He agreed.
So I don't know then. Okay. I don't know. So it's a good question. I don't know. Something to ask the Rav. Anyway, let's get back to our case over here. The point is, Rashi says that if the thing is no longer in his hand, so what happens is the two of them are fighting over it, Shnei Merchim Talos, like at the beginning of Bava Metzia, then already we don't believe the seller to say anymore which one he sold it to, because he doesn't necessarily remember himself. It's already out of his hand. It's already he's no longer have to be concerned about Mishapartah. Therefore, we can't assume that he remembers. That's how Rashi learns. Tosfos has a number of problems with Rashi's explanation, and therefore Tosfos explains, and also Tosfos' explanation therefore also affects the meaning of the next piece of Gemara, that rather the reason why we believe him when Mech said the other is because of a migli. He has a migli. He could say, I never sold it in the first place. Or he could say, I sold it, and then I bought it back from him. So therefore, as long as it's in his hand, if he's going to say that... Well, the guy could have given me money for any number of reasons. He owed me money previously, he gave me a present, etc.
He
has a migli. He could have said that, yeah. But a mech to the other, then there's no migli anymore. Okay. So the Gemara asks, the next is losing Mimanda. Why is there a suffix in the first place? Let's see. If he got money from Reuven, then it belongs to Reuven. If he got money from Shimon, it belongs to Shimon, or it has to be given yet to whatever, it has to be given to Reuven or to Shimon.
So why
is there a suffix?
So why is Neiman for the money and not the
No. We're not saying he's net. We're saying that if he only received, if you have two people claiming that they bought the item in the sense that they gave money for it,
right,
but only one of them, he only has money from one of them.
Right.
Well, of course, that's the one who bought it. We don't need his net money now. The answer is let's do it for the nugget which have value. Yes, but the case that we could be talking about is where he has money from both of them. But Omar, so he says, Chad bidai toi v'chad ba'al kochi, one of them gave me money willingly, that I was willing to accept the money from him and sell the thing to him. V'chad ba'al kochi, and the other one was against my will. V'lo yedia, and we do not know, hey mi daita, hey lo mi daita, which one was which. Now, Rashi learns, again, because Rashi learns that the point is that he has the responsibility of knowing which one is which. Therefore, Rashi's girsa, which is the girsa that we have over here in the Gemara, is v'lo yedia, we don't have edim to say which one is which. So again, as long as the thing is in his hand, then we can believe it, because it's his responsibility to know. Once it's out of his hand, and we don't have any edim, v'lo yedia, we have no way of knowing which one was bal kocha and which one was midaitai, then that's when we say we don't believe him anymore, and then they have to argue it out in basically.
So we don't know which one is bar kocho by yedia, meaning he doesn't remember who...
No, meaning, in other words, that once it's out of his hands, we don't accept it. Rashi learns, in other words, that the question, when the Gemara says, v'lachzi v'nechzi zuzi m'man noka, you know, you can understand the question as being, you can understand it as referring to one part of the case or the other part of the case. Because again, let's review. What do we say? The guy has nemonos as long as it's in his hands. Whoever he says he sold it to is the one he sold it to. On the other hand, once it's out of his hands, he has no more nemonos. When the Gemara is asking v'nechzi zuzi m'man noka, which part of this case, which scenario is it referring to in the question? Are we talking about the first case where it's still in his hand? And then the question is, if it's still in his hands, who cares what he says? Let's just see who he has the money from. Or is it going on the second case where it's out of his hand? And then the question is, okay, so it's out of his hands. Let's just see who he got the money from. Rashi is learning, Tosfos explains, that's part of Tosfos' long explanation over here, that Rashi evidently learns that the question is referring to the second part of the case. Why is it we're saying, how come you're saying once it's out of the Moshe's hand, you don't believe him anymore, the next is Uzim Iman Naka, he'd go to him, let him say which one he received the money from? The answer is because, since Rashi says, the point is, we're talking about he has money from both. Again, once it's out of his hands, he lost his nemonos because he doesn't make it his business to remember anymore. We can't assume he makes it his business to remember which one he sold it to. It doesn't matter to him anyway. He's no longer under the threat of Mishapartah. Therefore, it would be a case where one or the other of them needs some kind of evidence in the form of edim. Neither one has edim. Lo yedia, it is not known which one gave bal kocha, which one not. Therefore, they're going to have to argue it out in Beis Din, and you're going to have the scenario at the beginning above Matthias Zerim, Anima says Zerim, Akula Shali, Zerim, Akula Shali, where each one is going to have to swear and they're going to have to say it. Yeah. So Mishapartah is before he actually transferred the object to the person, when he received money. Now, that's all how that should be. Tosfos, on the other hand, learns differently. Tosfos learns that the reason for the seller in their monos is because of a matter of migri, whereas once it's out of his hands, it's not that he doesn't remember anymore, it's just he doesn't have a migri anymore. Therefore,
we don't
No, well, therefore, we don't believe him. But the point, obviously, that's the bottom line, is we don't believe him. But the question is why, and therefore, the difference is, therefore, according to Tosfos, the Gemara's question, Vavasi is building Iman Maka, is referring to the first case in the Braita. Why did he need to have Nehemonos in the first place? What do we need to resort to a Migui? Just see who he got the money from. And the answer is, he got money for both. And now, Tosfos' Gemara says, not Veloy Yedia, but Veloy Yoda. He doesn't know, he, the seller, doesn't know which one he received from. So again, as long as it's in his possession, fine, he has a migui. Once it's out of his possession, and he himself doesn't remember which one he received the money from willingly and which one he received unwillingly, that's it. He doesn't remember anymore, he doesn't have a migui anymore, so therefore not migui. That's how choice is given.
Whatever he does, it's just true. And if he does remember...
If he does remember, I mean, probably, I don't know, maybe too late. I mean, again, it's out of his hands and already he doesn't have a migui. Another case where we say that one person has a certain nemon. Nemon dayan loy melozechisi velozechiyati. A dayan is believed to say that among these two people who came to me for a din Torah, I declared this one in the right and that one in the wrong. Dinim amanus, obviously, we're talking about. When is that talking about? When the Bala Jinnim are still standing in front of him. So again, Rashi explains that's basically the same idea as with the Mother. Since they're still standing in front of him, then he has to remember. He necessarily has to remember who it was that he declared that he declared right and wrong. Yes.
The judges don't remember
even. Fine, okay. But if they're not standing before him anymore, then we don't believe him. Again, because the same idea, because you can't necessarily assume that he remembers anymore. Now here it's not so much a matter of migui. So here Tosfos can't use their same explanation that he has a migui. Rishonim point out, by the way, that this is all talking about only if you had one single dayan. But if you had two dayanim or three, normally a din Torah is supposed to be judged by three dayanim. The case with the kedushin, well, it's not a question of whether they remember or not. If whatever they say, they have at least the strength of Eidim. If they're two or three dayanim, they have at least the strength of Eidim. Actually, there's an opinion in Shulchan Aruch that maybe even have they even have a stronger.
Can dayanim be Eidim at the same time?
The point is that if later on these dayanim are coming and saying, we declared Reuven to be right and Shimon to be wrong, and that Shimon has to pay Reuven, they're saying Eidus about what they themselves saw and what they themselves did. But yeah. Do we say that they have exactly the strength of Edim in the sense that if there were other Edim who came and contradicted them, then maybe we wouldn't believe them, or maybe not. Maybe we say they have an even stronger thing than other Edim, and even if other Edim contradicted them, we wouldn't. Okay, anyway, the point is here we're talking about one Dayan. How comes it that one Dayan is judging in the first place? So either you have the concept of the Mumcha L'Rabim, if you have Smicha, the original kind of Smicha that is, then he can, and it says in Pirkei Avos, Alti Don Yechidi, it'll be in this coming week's Pirkei Avos, Alti Don Yechidi, you're not supposed to judge alone, because only the Eivishta can judge alone. Nevertheless, La Locha, it is possible. The other possibility is also it can happen that the Bala Dinim, even if he's not a Mumcha L'Rabim, it can happen that the Bala Dinim themselves voluntarily said, sort of like arbitration, we're willing to be judged by you. But now, the point is, he's only one person. But again, as long as they're in front of him, we can believe him. Once they left, then no. Question is, v'nechzi chosa man makit. Okay, but you should still ask, shouldn't we see which one has the psak din in his hand that says that he was right? The answer is, loitzuch dekriyaz chosayu. Okay, but we could be talking about that it was ripped up. He doesn't have it in his possession anymore. Therefore, it's he said versus he said. No, but no. Actually, the truth is, this matter of chos is actually because actually it's not so simple. When we say that he has a chos in it, when we say that if he has a chos in his hand, we would believe him. Meforshim have quite a bit of discussion about what does it say in this chos? Does it have a name in it? Yeah, there's chos of a piece of paper that says it's fact in. But does it actually say a name? Does it say Pliny Ben Pliny has won his court case and is entitled to X amount from Shimon? Or does it just say the bearer of this document is entitled to X amount from? If it just says the bearer of this document,
it's not nothing, not necessarily,
because the very fact that Reuven has it in his possession might be a strong reason to say that it was given to him. On the other hand, couldn't Shimon argue that it was actually given to me and I dropped it and Shimon found it and Reuven found it? But that's what we're saying. If he has chusa manoket, that alone would be a strong enough reason to say that it's his. Again, let's say we have the scenario that the Dayan, they've already left the base in Shibul. Later on, they come back and later on ask, okay, so who won the court case, Reuven or Shimon? The Dayan says Reuven. Now we're saying he has no nemon. But if on top of that, if Reuven also has socked in his hand that says the bearer of this document is entitled to X amount, maybe those two things taken together ought to be enough. It doesn't say Reuven's name, doesn't matter. The fact that putting that together with the Dayan, maybe that ought to be enough.
Still considered valid without his name?
Yeah.
And they don't keep records?
Well, they keep records of the argument. That's what I was going to say in a second, but not necessarily of the final socked in. I mean, the final fact in, that's the document that they give to him.
No, their own record.
Maybe not. But wait. So that's the question.
Records, books.
Okay, v'necht is chus aman noket. So let's see who's holding the chus, who's holding the basic document that says that he won in his hand. And the answer is, let's look at the decree of chusai. We're talking about that it was ripped up. Okay. Then the question is, so fine, if we're not sure who the Beis Din decided in accordance of, why do we need to say that Einu Nemon? Okay, he's not Nemon. Let him judge the case over again. Let him start over again. Judge the case. They'll have exactly the same evidence, exactly the same arguments and everything. And Mekoshim, here's where Mekoshim points out. One of them can change his arguments from before. The answer is Beis Din does have records of what the arguments were. So if he tries to come up, if for example, previously, Reuven made a certain argument before, and now he wants to say an argument that would contradict that, then they can pull open the records and say, hey, wait a minute.
They don't keep records of the decision. I mean,
maybe not, because once the decision is made, that's it. You know, each point after Zaka, each point after Chaya, what do they need to keep it long term for? You have a document. Normally a person has a document and then after that, as soon as possible after that, he's going to get the judgment executed. You know, that's what he needs.
Even in Palestine?
Yeah, I mean, he's still, still there soon afterwards, whatever. Okay. Anyway. So, why don't we just rejudge the case again and you'll come to the same conclusion? The answer is Beshuda de Daini. We could be talking about a case over here where it was up to the discretion of the Dayan. Rashi gives an example, which we learned in Ksuvos last year, a case where somebody said that I want to give away my property to Tuvia. Two Tuvias came to claiming it, and both of them were relatives, or both of them were neighbors or whatever, so one has no stronger, you can't argue, let's say one of them is a relative and one's not, in which case we'd say he probably meant to give it to his relative. So in that case, we said, Shudda de Dayan. Rashi says, meaning the Dayan has to figure out which one was the nifter more close, was the nifter closer with. And that would be the one, where not really discretion, but rather the Dayan's judgment. It's a judgment call, basically. Which one does it seem that the nifter must have referenced? Well, in that case, if you rejudge the case, the Dayan may come to the opposite conclusion. Tosfos says that's not really it, because, again, if the point is, for example, in the case of the two Tuvias, that the Dayan is going to think it over and say, you know, Tuvia, he was more friendly with Tuvia Goldstein than he was with Tuvia Silverstein, therefore let's give it to Tuvia Goldstein, fine, if he rejudges the case, we'll come to the same conclusion. What's the problem? No, rather, Tosfos says, Shudda de Daini means a case where literally it's completely up to the discretion of the Dayan. He can flip a coin. There's cases there's various cases in Gemara that it's Shudda de Daini. We're meaning, Tosfos says, it's not just the Dayan has to evaluate the facts of the case and use his sixth sense sort of to determine what the person meant. No, we're talking about it literally is up to the Dayan can decide the case however he likes. Well, therefore, if he rejudges it again, he may decide the other. He may at random decide the other way around. Yeah. Again, you have cases where the two sides are exactly equally balanced. Yeah. Interesting, by the way, there are Mephoshim who point out the Yerushalmi, in places where the Bavli uses the expression shudda de daini, there are a number of such places where the Yerushalmi uses the expression shuchta de daini. Shuchta literally meaning shofan. So there are Rishonim who say that what it actually, the Ran maybe says, I don't remember, that it actually means that in a case like that, where everything is exactly balanced, that it really is completely up to the discretion of the Dayan, one of them is entitled to give the Dayan a present to get him to judge in his favor. Look, I mean, after all, it's exactly balanced anyway. The Dayan, anyhow, can flip a coin and decide to very well, you can give him the coin. other Rishonim take very strong issue with that, but so that's the third possibility of what Shudda the Dayanim should, according to that, Shudda would be short for Shukta. That would mean literally, yeah. So that's the case. That's the kind of case we were talking about, that you would have to rely on the Dayanim and their monos to say, I judge this way, not that way. And again, once they're out of the base in Shtibble, then you don't have that anymore. Going back to the case that we had yesterday about a midwife being having a nemonos to say what the status of the child is, whether he's a bechor or not. Shloisha nemonin ala bechor. There are three people who are believed as far as about a bechor to say, in other words, to say that a child is a bechor or not. Elohein chaya oviv v'imay, the midwife and his father and his mother. Chaya la'al. So the midwife has nemonos only right away, as we said yesterday. Even once she turns around or leaves the room, then she loses that nemonos because you can't expect her to keep track of these things.
How would they know?
The mother had twins. The midwife is there, delivering first one and the other. So she is identifying this one as a bechor.
Not any bechor.
No. Because otherwise what? Yeah. Otherwise, how does she know? So that's the midwife. Imoy kol shiva. His mother has nemonos throughout the first 7 days because it's before his bris. He's constantly with his mother. His father doesn't even recognize him so much yet. He's constantly with the mother. Therefore, she's the one who has nemonos. Actually, that's how Rashi Mefoshim explained that. On Rashi explained that he's learning that during those 7 days, only the mother has nemonos, not the father. On the other hand, the Rambam just says generically that the father has nemonos la'olam, as the Gemara is going to say. So therefore, the Mefarshim explains the Rambam would disagree with Rashi on that and say the father also has nemonos from birth. Just the point is, within the 7 days, the mother also has nemonos. But after
the father has born, the mother during the pregnancy and delivery is so taken by the
no, but she'll, again, but she'll know. She'll know if she has twins or whatever, which one is which. Okay. And yeah. And a father has nemonos forever. So again, according to Rashi, forever means from the 8th day, from the day of the bris onward. According to the Rambam, it would mean forever from birth until. Kibitanya, as we learn in a Braisa, the pasuk says Yakir. The pasuk says Kiyat Abchor Ben Asnur Yakir, that he should recognize him to give him a double portion. It means Yakir Enu La'Chera. Means he should that the father has the ability to make other people recognize him as a Abchor. Mikana Amar Rabbi Yehuda, based on this, Rabbi Yehuda says, Neman Amam Adam Loima Zebni Bechor. A person is believed to say, this son of mine is a Bechor. Uchshem Shad Neman Loima Zebni Bechor. And just as we believe him to say that he is a Bechor, Kach Neman Loima Zebni Grusha Zebni Echolusa. So also he has Neman to Pachal him, to say, for example, even though I'm a Koyan, that his mother was a Grusha or a Chalusa, and therefore he's a Chol. He has that Neman, that same Neman. The Chachamim ain't a Neman, whereas the Chachamim say he does not have that Neman. The halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda. In this case, the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda. It's one of those weird cases. I don't know, but probably because the Gemara mentions this in a few places. The Gemara establishes that Mishnah is like it, etc. Also, So before we talk about that, may answer, let's say the father is saying that when I married her, I didn't know she was a Grusha. And she got pregnant. Later on, I found out she was a Grusha. Fine, I divorced her like I'm supposed to. But the fact is, the child is the son of a Grusha. So he's not made from Asmei Grusha. But yet, he's testifying that the child is a possible, the Cholo. Tosfos points out, when you get... Because you ain't on a Mason Asmei Grusha. If a person were to come to Beis Din and say, I did a certain Aveira, we learned about this in Subas, for example, we don't believe him. Tosfos points out a different issue over here. When he's declaring his son a bechor, that's for the son's benefit, that he's getting a double portion. Where do we see from that he has the ability to do something to the son's detriment, to declare ben grusha or ben chalutza? Tosfos' answer is very simply. If he's declaring, if we're saying he has the ability to declare his son a bechor, that also means, what if he has previous children, what if his wife, rather, has previous children, by declaring this one a bechor, amounts to saying, the previous children are not from me. Then I'm there. Obviously, the Torah is saying he has the ability to do that. Well, then he has the ability to do something similar for this child as well, to say that he's a cholo.
If he has the ability to say that,
by implication, say that the other children who were thought until now to be his are really mamzerim, then the same thing over here, he has it. The Mishnah said Abba Shol hayakur l'shtuki beduki, that Abba Shol had a different name for shtuki, he called him beduki, my beduki. Ilema, does that mean Shaboykin is Imoy? Again, the Shtuki was the case where he knows his mother and he doesn't know his father. Is it that we're talking about that we ask his mother, but emeres v'kosher nivalti, and she, if she said that I had relations with the kosher ne'emenes, then we will believe her. We have to ask, Kidman, that according, then who is this opinion of Abba Shol, who does that follow? In other words, you would have the machlokes then would be that the Chachamim are saying a shtuki is a shtuki. He doesn't know his father. The mother was a penuria at the time, for example, and that's it. The child has to be assumed to be a suffix apostle, whereas Abba Shol is saying you can ask her and go by what she says. Well, who would that be like? Kiram Gamliel. That seems to be like the opinion of Rav Gamliel that we learned at the beginning of Ksudah. The problem with that is Hanena. We already learned that concept one time. Ditznan, we learned, in other words, we don't need our Mishnah to be telling us that again. Ditznan, we learned in a Mishnah in the first paragraph of Ksudah, Hoytimu Beres, if you have a woman who was pregnant, Pnuya, V'amrullah Mativa Shal Uber Zeh, and I asked her, what's the story with this baby? Where who is the father? And Amr Lahem Me'ish Ploini V'Koyinu, she says it's from Ploini, and he is a Koyin, meaning that he has Yichus. Before she talk about, does she have Ne'emonu to say that the child of a Koyin, in the sense that he can eat Truma or serve in the Bismithish, etc., that's a whole other Machalikus. But the point is, she's saying that the father was a Me'yuchus, in other words, that the child is not a Mamzer. Rav Gamliel and Rav Eliezer are Ne'emonu, so Rav Gamliel and Rav Eliezer say that we do believe her. Rabbi Shua says we don't live based on what she says. In other words, she doesn't have any nemonos in that. You can't necessarily take as a given what she's saying. And we find that the halacha is like Rav Gamliel, that she is believed. So why would our Mishnah need to tell us again that Abba Shol holds the same thing? All the Mishnah, or not only why does it have to tell us, but why didn't it mention it over there, when we're talking about Machlokes, Rav Gamliel and Rav Eliezer, versus Rav Yeshua? The Mishnah could have just as well said over there that Abba Shol also holds like Rav Gamliel. Why wait until here, and all of a sudden present it as like a whole new thing? The answer is Chodol HaHashab B'Bitza. We need both Mishnahs. One tells us, Rav Gamliel's case in Ksubas over there tells us that we believe her about her herself. In the sense that, now, if the man that she had relations with was a cholo, or nothin, or a mamzer, or whatever, one of the psulei kahuna, she would be osuti every truma. She's a pnuya, remember, she's not married. Until now, she was a bastoyan, let's say, she was allowed to eat truma. By that, by having relations with somebody that's also to her, she'd become possible for eating truma. So Rav Gamliel was saying, that's not a problem. We believe her that the man she had relations with was kosher, and she remained kosher to eat truma. That's as far as her. What about the status of the child? Again, when she says, each point of the not necessarily, because she has cheskes kashrus up until this point. The baby doesn't. We talked about that concept yesterday in the case of the midwife. So therefore, v'chodo v'hachshu b'vita. So we need our Mishnah to tell us that not only she is kosher, but so is the daughter. Because that's what our Mishnah is talking about, the status of the child. Is the child a shtuki or not? And that's Abba Shol is coming to tell us that if you ask the mother and she says, ish plenty of a koyin or whoever, not a koyin, but whatever, somebody who has yichus, then not only, Rav Gamliel told us that we don't have a problem with her. Fine, she's not a halala. She'll be allowed to marry a koyin, she'll be allowed to eat truma, etc. Not only that, Abba Shol is saying the child will also be kosher in that case.
Why wouldn't we not believe her?
Because the child has no cheskes kashrus up until now. Rav Gamliel might say that we can believe her because she herself has a cheskes kashrus, but the baby doesn't.
But if the mother says that the baby doesn't have cheskes kashrus,
the mother doesn't have the ability to no. What we just said, Yakir is the Torah that the father has the ability to determine his son's kashrus, to say that he's a cholol or a mamzer or what have you. That's true. The mother does not have that nemonis. We talked about that in previous productive. However, and there is actually a machlokas in this case. If the mother were to say that I was nivol to a pachol, would it affect the baby or not on that basis? But we're not even getting into that. The point is, if she's saying that it was a kosher, then Abba Shol is telling us, then fine. That tells us that the child is also kosher. Because she's beduki, because she's been asked, she's been interrogated, and she says that it was a kosher, good. Then we're good.
Even though she's not believed in terms of...
No, in other words, Abba Shol is saying both. I agree with Rav Gamliel that she's believed as far as herself. She is still kosher to marry a Koyan. And I'm adding on top of that that she's also believed as far as the child now, the child now can be assumed to be a kosher. That's why we need both Mishnayos. Okay, question is, okay, well, in the Gemara over there in Ksubas, we had a discussion. What exactly are Rav Gamliel and Rav Eliezer versus Rav Yeshua arguing about? Are they arguing about the status of the mother, or are they also arguing about the status of the child? So it works out well according to the opinion that even Rav Gamliel and Rav Eliezer, who say that she is kosher, would still hold that the child is possible. Again, because the child has up until now no cheskes kashrus. But according to the opinion over there in the Gemara, that Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Eliezer hold that she's kosher and so is the baby.
Since she's kosher.
Since she's kosher, so is the baby, because the same cheskes kashrus works for the baby as well. Abishol, my also lashmina. And then again, you have the question, what is the chiddush and what Abishol is saying? The answer is, da Abishol adzifa b'di Rabbi Gamliel. Even with that, what Abishol is saying is still stronger and better than what Rabbi Gamliel is saying. To email Hossam, because if we only had the Mishnah in Sogot, have Amina Hossam the Roy Pshayr in Ekla, you could be talking about, fine, that's a case of a Pnuya. As long as she's a Pnuya, where again, most of the world, as we talked about yesterday, does not create Mamzerim or whatever, and let's say even we're talking in a city where most of the people are kosher to the Kohona, most of them are not Chalolim or other Psoli Kohona. So then, fine, you can assume that you have strong reason to assume that the man that she had relations with, it was kosher, and therefore the baby is also kosher. How about the case, for example, of our Mishnah? It's not necessarily talking about Roy Psharin. It could be talking about Roy Psulin Esla. Could be talking about, for example, not necessarily that the woman is a Pnuya. She could be an Arusa, where most of the world is also to her. But she's only Mutsu to her Arus. Everybody else would create a Mamzer and would make her possible a corner. Amaloy, you would think maybe not, that if she claims that this baby comes from my arus, maybe we shouldn't take her at her word. No. That is why Abishol needs to tell us that he holds, even if Roy Psulin, even in the case of an Arusa, or the case where most of the city are Halolim or what have you, you can still believe her. If she says that the child is from my arus, then we're all good. The child is kosher. Omer Rabbah halacha k'Abishol, that is in fact the halacha like is like Abishol.
The reason why we would believe her, but not the child,
because she had a cheskes kashrus at one time. She was definitely kosher l'kohanah. She wasn't born a halala.
No.
So at one time she had a cheskes kashrus of being kosher to a kohen. Yes. The daughter never had such a cheskes kashrus. She was only just born.
The Kesis Kashrus of Dota doesn't follow the Kishrus.
Not necessarily. There's Chazaka is Chazaka. I mean, Chazaka has its funny rules about Chazaka, but the point is, up until now, we had no Chazaka, that the daughter is Tasha. She may be born originally as a Psula. Whereas, again, the mother we know wasn't born originally as a Psula. Okay. Mishnah says, Kol Asur and Love Bekol, all the cases of all the people who are authored to marry into the congregation, for example, Mamzerim, Mutarim Love Zebezer, are all allowed to intermarry among each other. Not just Mamzerim, also Shesuki. Again, we talked before that Midaraita, Shesuki can marry a Mamzer, or Shesuki can marry a Yisrael. We said Midarabonon, or Shesuki couldn't marry a Yisrael. But they're all allowed to marry with each other.
Why do we need this?
Because Rabbi Yehuda Oyser, Rabbi Yehuda says it's also. Rabbi Yehuda, that it's also, for example, for a Mamzer to marry a Shesuki.
We had that. Didn't we have that?
No, we didn't discuss it. We discussed that a Mamzer, we didn't talk about a Ger and a Mamzer.
Right.
Rabbi Yehuda says it depends. Badon b'badon mutter. A badai posel is allowed to marry a badai posel. So a mamzer can marry a mamzer, a mamzer can marry a nothing, because okay. They're all badai. Badon b'tfeitan. But for a badai to marry a suffix, for example, a mamzer to marry a shtukis, or seken b'badon, or the other way around, a suffix, for example, a shtuki to marry a mamzeres. Or one Suffolk marrying another Suffolk, for example, Suki marrying a Sukis or an Asufis. All of those are also because you don't know. So one member of the couple is one or both members of the couple are Suffolk. They might actually be a kosher. What if you have, for example, the Suki who's marrying a Mamzer? What if he's really a kosher? And then you have a kosher marrying a Mamzer, which you can't do. Therefore, I believe you can't do that. The alien is fake. What do we mean by Suffolk? Shtuki,
right?
No, we'll talk about it in the Gemara. Mephoshim talk about the pros and cons of it. Yes, actually, when we talk about Rabbi Eliezer, yes, they're saying. So there's two ways of looking at it. We talked yesterday about a limud from the word kohol and from the word mamzer that we said that only a badai mamzer is also a Suffolk mamzer is Muslim. One possibility is that Rabbi Eliezer does not believe in those limudim. And therefore, he would say that a Suffolk is not allowed to marry a Mamzer, and also that a Suffolk is not allowed to marry into the regular
tradition.
According to him, according to that, then it would come out Daraisa. Or the other possibility is maybe he agrees that Daraisa is allowed, but Maila also be Yuxin, like we said yesterday, that Abonin wanted to keep a higher standard of Yuxin. So according to Rabbi Eliezer, therefore, would come out basically who can a Sufi or an Asufi marry. They can marry a guest, or Gieris, or an Eben Meshuchah. Interesting idea, actually, that they, freed slave. No, an Eben Meshuchah is like a Gieris in that regard. Actually, there's
no suffix about an Eben.
Doesn't matter that Gieris is not suffix either. We said a Gieris is not considered Kalash, as we said yesterday. An interesting idea that they bring, you know, we talked about in the previous paragraph the idea that a mamzer can have a shifra knanis and marries her and the children are above him, and then he frees them. What can a sufi or an asufi do? He can do something similar, but he can be meshachar her al tanai. If I'm kosher, then I'm being meshachar you, and you're shifra meshachareres, and I'm allowed to marry you. If I'm a kosher, if I really am a mamzer, then you're still a shifra. The children will be born as sofet avodim, and then I'll free them, and one way or the other, we'll take care of the situation. The Eilu in Asfekas, what are the cases of Sofik? Shtuki, Asufi, the Kursi. So the Shtuki and Asufi that we had in the previous Mishnah, as well as the Kursi.
That's also
a no, it's not so that we're going to have to talk about in the Gemara. What exactly is the Sofik about Kursi? We're going to talk about it. The Gemara is going to talk about it, later on, where is it? On Ayin Hay. On Ayin Hay, what exactly the Sofik is about Kursi.
Well, it's for Gerrit, but it's going to have so many commandments in the Torah.
We're not saying you have to, but they're allowed to. Like Rava said that Rava mentioned to his Kehillah yesterday where there were many Gerim among them. You know what? You have the broadest possible choice. You want to marry Bas Koyin, you're able to. You want to marry Mamzeres, you're able to.
Yeah.
Gerim's allowed to marry Bas Koyin. Mamzeres are seriously not them stolen. Two more thoughts up. My call out through the children of a ger and a bas koyin, yeah, would be able to marry. Yeah,
it would.
Yeah. Well, we're going to talk about that in the Gemara a little bit today, and we're going to talk about more in a couple of days what the dinim of children of gerim is. Yeah.
The sons would be
Yisrael.
If the daughter's married.
We'll talk about it in the Gemara today a little bit, and we'll talk about more on Ayin Chesed, about the Ayin Ayin Chesed. We'll talk about the various dinim of descendants of Gerim marrying into families of Torah. Anyway, okay. Who starts off? My kol aser and lover b'kol. What do we mean when the Mishnah starts off? Kol aser and lover b'kol are allowed to intermarry among the others. Are allowed to intermarry with each other? What aser and lover b'kol are we talking about? Ilem amamzeri and asinish suki b'asuri. Are you saying, I'm talking about the Mamzerim, the Nesinim, the Shtukim, and the Asufim? Hatonalei Reisha. Well, the previous Mishnah already told us what you ask. Mamzerim, Nesinim, Shtukim, Asufim, Mutar, and Lava, Zavazer. We have the previous Mishnah already told us. That. There's no Chiddush in our Mishnah. But two, and not only that, what do you mean, Rabbi Yehuda Oyser? You also have to ask the question, when Rabbi Yehuda says it's Oyser, what does he mean? Aheya. Which case is he referring to? Ilema Abadon Rasfekon. Is he talking about the case that a Badai, for example, a Badai Mamzer, is not allowed to marry a Sufik, a Sufi? Well, Talmud Katani Sefer. Well, the Mishnah continues, Rabbi Yezah, I'm Abadon Rasfekon, Abadon Rasfekon, 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 Rasfekon. Miklad, Rabbi Yehuda Lai Smirlai. Obviously, that means that Rabbi Yehuda must be disagreeing with that. So it can't just be that Rabbi Yehuda is saying that a Badai is not allowed to marry a Sufik. Rabbi Yezah is telling us that a Badai can't marry a Sufik. So Rabbi Yehuda wouldn't be saying anything different. We have to necessarily disagree. V'chitema Rabbi Yehuda Oyser Ager b'Mamzeres. You might argue that maybe when Rabbi Yehuda says that it's Oyser, maybe it's referring to the case of a Ger marrying a Mamzeres, which we did learn yesterday. We talked about that Rabbi Yehuda has said a Ger is not allowed to marry a Mamzeres. So maybe that's what Rabbi Yehuda is telling us in our Mishnah. The problem with that is, Midi gave him Mamzeres. Katani, the Mishnah didn't say anything about a Ger and a Mamzeres. Kol Oyser and Lo Levakol Katani. It said all the people who are Oyser to marry each other call. Or a Mishnah. A Ger is not Oyser to marry into the Kohol. A Ger can marry a Bas Koyin or a Bas Levi or a Bas Yisrael. So he's not Oyser Lo Levakol. Rabbi Yehuda cannot possibly be referring to that. Amar Rabbi Yehuda. So Rabbi Yehuda, the Amorah, says as follows. Hachikama. Yeah, well, obviously, he has to explain what the Mishnah said. What the Mishnah means is, when we start off by saying kol asur and lover b'kohol, we do not mean the people who are also to marry into the general kohol, such as mamzerim and nesim. We mean kol asur and lover b'kohol kahuna. We mean that all the people who are also to marry into the congregation of kohanim, meaning the women who are also to marry kohanim, Maininu, and specifically, what are we talking about? Giyoris Chosiv about Shalashonim, a girl.
We know that, we talk about Kohanim.
Because we have to, by elimination, since we can't be talking about a regular call, because again, either our Mishnah, first of all, our Mishnah would be redundant, and second of all, then we can't understand what Rabbi Hoda is saying. So because of that, we have to reinterpret that, what happens, in other words, that, the Tanakh, when we start, it has to mean Kahal Kohanim. Anybody, the group of people who are not allowed to marry into Kahal Kohanim, meaning who, and specifically what do we mean? Now, we don't mean, for example, regular grushas or what have you, because a grusha is, not only that, a grusha is taka allowed to marry whoever she wants. I mean, she can't marry a mamzer, she can't marry still a Kahal, of course, but a grusha, she can't marry a Kohen, but I'm saying she can marry a Levi or Yisrael or what have you. You can't say, Kohasur and Love of a Kahal, Mutorin Love of a Zeh. What would that mean exactly? That a grusha is allowed to marry a gorush? There's no chiddush in that. No, what it means is giyoris chosim v'ashalashanam yemet. But it means a girl who was this geyer under 3 years old. Now, if she was less than 3 years old, bia was not possible. Bia with less than 3 years old is not considered to be significant in halacha. It has no implications in halacha, and therefore you might argue. Now we know what we learned about in Yevamos when we talk about that a giyoris is not allowed to marry a kohen. What's the reason behind it? On the face of it, it's because the Torah says a kohen is also to marry a zoyna. On the face of it, then that includes a giyoris. The question is, does it include then a giyoris who was this guy or less than 3 years old? We learned there in the Gemara that Reb Shimon says yes. However, that she's a kosher yid, and therefore that she's allowed to marry a kohen. The Chachamim disagree. They say that she can't. Not because she's a zoyna. Rashi says because there's another pasuk, there's a pasuk in Yechezkel that says that kohenim have to marry mizera beis Yisrael. So from born Jews. So even a geyurda under 3 years old is excluded. The Rambam gives a different reason. The Rambam says, true, the girl herself may not have had bia, but her parents or family or whatever are all shot off bezima. We can assume that the goyim are promiscuous.
But that's not a reason. She has to marry beis Yisrael. Whether it's the Zima or not.
I'm saying, Rashi brings the pasuk in Yechezkel. The Rambam doesn't use that reason because the Rambam would say you can't learn Dinim from Yechezkel. Yechezkel is one of the Nevi'im. You need a source in the Torah. The reason is because the Torah's definition of Zoyna includes somebody who was born from a family that's short of Zima.
It's also
to the Zana. For that purpose, yes. Obviously, it's no blemish on her, but the fact is, yes. Anyway, the point is, so if you have a girl who is this guy or less than 3 years old, then what our Mishnah is saying, she's also a lover of the Kahal Kavona. Nevertheless, Mutorim, Lover, Zebezeh, nevertheless, as a Giyoris, she is allowed to marry a Mamzer, for example. Because again, we said yesterday, a Mamzer is allowed to marry a Ger, and then vice versa. So therefore, that's what the Mishnah would mean. Kol Aser and Lover, Bekahol, the Tanakhama is saying, anybody, namely this under 3 years old Giyoris, who's offered to marry a Kohen, is Mutter, however, to marry a Mamzer.
Under three, why not over three?
Over three also, but over three, there's no Chiddush in it. Because over three, of course, she's also to marry a Kohen. The point is, the point of our Mishnah would be the Tanakhama is telling us that I don't hold like Reb Shimon. Reb Shimon would hold that such a girl is kosher to marry a kohen. The Tanakhama, before three, the Tanakhama is informing us of our Mishnah, is informing us, I disagree with that.
Why would he, Reb Shimon, say that she's kosher?
Because Reb Shimon says that she's not a zoyna. She herself can't have had bia, so therefore she's kosher. This is also true, yeah.
What?
Yeah. Your question, why the Gemara didn't, why we didn't say that's more than 3 years old, yeah. So the Gemara asks, why do we need to be doichik and say the Mishnah is talking about a girl who is this guy who's less than 3 years old and then say that the Tanakhama is disagreeing with the Rishim Bayachai? Why don't you just say more simply that the Mishnah is talking about any age Giyotis and we're talking even according to the Shimon that he definitely agrees a girl over 3 years with this guy who is also to marry a Kohen? And fine, the Mishnah is telling us you should know, but she's allowed to marry a man. Why don't we just say the Mishnah that way? The reason is, imken mitzida tabra. Because if you do that, then you're going to have a contradiction right then and there. Ella, because what are you going to say? Because what are you going to say? Ella, taima debas shalashanam yemeh. What are you going to say? That the Mishnah is telling us that she's a psula kohona because she's over 3 years old. Hapchosim debas shalashanam yemeh. Which would imply that she was under three. Demutaris love of the kohona, which again, according to Shimon, she is allowed to marry a kohen. Asura love is ever there. Why should she be also, however, to marry a mamzer? After all, in other words, Reb Shimon says like this. It's true that the fact of the matter is, okay, Reb Shimon is saying she's allowed to marry a Kohen because she's not considered a Zoyna. Very well. She's still part of Kahal Gerim. And we established yesterday that according to Reb Yossi, anyway, Kahal Gerim is not called a Kohal, meaning that Mamzerim are allowed to marry Gerim. So if the Mishnah were to tell us that we're talking about a girl over 3 years old, it was Nisgayer, and the Mishnah would even be according to Reb Shimon, then the question would be, so what's the implication? That only if she was Nisgayer over 3 is she mutter to marry a Mamzer, but if she was Nisgayer under 3, she's not allowed to marry a Mamzer? That's not what Reb Shimon says. Therefore, you can't understand the Mishnah that way.
He says
that a Gioris of any age is able to marry a Mamzer. Yes, because the only difference between above 3 and below 3 is whether she can marry a Kohen. As far as marrying a Ger, there's no difference. She's still from Kahal Gerim, and not from Kahal Hashem. So we can't understand the Mishnah that way. Necessarily, therefore, you have to understand that the Mishnah is coming to disagree with Reb Shimon. That was saying, doesn't matter above 3, below 3, either way, she's also to marry a Kohen. So we're talking below 3, she's also to marry a Kohen. And you should know, she is mutter to marry a Geiris. And of course, if she was the guy above 3, then same thing.
Yeah, the
Geiris, yeah. And then we would say, Rabbi Yehuda is disagreeing with that again. Rabbi Yehuda would say, just like he said in the previous Gemara, that a Geir is not allowed to marry a Mamzer. Therefore, he would say that this Geiris is not allowed to marry a Mamzer. That would be what we mean in the Mishnah of Rabbi Yehuda Oyser. The problem with that is, the Gemara says, Klolahu. In that case, if that's how you're understanding the Mishnah, that the Tanakama is saying a general rule that anybody who is also to marry a Kohen is allowed to marry Zebazeh, is allowed to marry, for example, a Mamzer, how can you say there's such a rule?
We didn't say anybody. We said just the
But you're not going to make a rule just for one case, because that's not how rules work. Kol hasurin love b'kohom, mutorin love Zebazeh. So if you're going to tell me that it means anyone who's also to marry a Kohen, well then, what about women, what about an Amona, a Grusha, a Halala Zoyna? None of them are allowed to marry a Kohen. And they're not allowed to marry a Mamzer. We don't say just because a woman is a Grusha, she's allowed to marry a Mamzer. An Amona can marry a regular Kohen, not a Kohen Gadol. No, right, that's the point. That's the point. Not only that, are you telling me then that the Mishnah would be implying the other way around, that anybody who is mutter to intermarry with Kohanim is also to marry Mamzerim? What about, we just said a Ger is allowed to marry a Bas Kohen. Everybody agrees to that.
And he can also marry
a Mamzer. So you see that the rule, if you say that the rule in our Mishnah is talking about Psulei Tau Kohana, then it doesn't really work. Tosfos points out, by the way, I mean, this that you're saying Ger is mutter to marry a Bas Kohen, that doesn't prove the yichus of the Ger. That's just because a Bas Kohen doesn't have an issur to marry a Ger. How is that relevant over here? Tosfos says, therefore, that what we're talking about is a different thing.
Doesn't prove.
In other words, we're arguing that you're saying Ger is mutter to marry a Kohen, that shows that he's mutter to marry into the families of Kohenim. But that's not because he's mutter to marry in the families of Kohenim. It's just because a Bas Kohen doesn't have an issur to marry him. That's not the same thing as saying that he's mutter to marry into the families of Kohanim, as if to say like he's on the level of the ones who can marry into Kal Hashem, which he cannot. But yeah, so Tosfos says no. What we mean is like this: we're going to discuss the Gemara itself is going to discuss in a few lines, and we're going to discuss later on. On Ein Zayin, Ein Ches, the question about children of Gerim being allowed to marry Kohanim. What the Gemara is saying, Tosfos says, is if a Ger marries a Bas Yisrael, their daughter is allowed to marry a Kohen, which answers your question from before now. Yet, Tosfos says, that daughter of this Ger and a Bas Yisrael is also allowed to marry a Mamzer. Now, the Rambam learns differently. Tosfos learns that way, that she is also allowed to marry a Mamzer. So that's the question then. So if you have a Ger married a Bas Yisrael, their daughter is just as well allowed to marry a Kohen as a Mamzer. How can you say? What kind of rule is our Mishnah saying? Anybody who's also to marry Kohenim is mutter to marry Mamzerim, implying anybody who's mutter to marry Kohenim is also to marry Mamzerim. It doesn't work.
Here it's both.
That's the question.
Now rule says one or the other.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. No. So we have to discard that explanation. We can't say that's what the Mishnah means when it starts off by saying, we have to discard the explanation that love as a kohol means kahal koyim.
Right.
Yes, we can't say it means kahal koyim.
Which is the same thing here.
Yes, anybody who's allowed or not allowed to marry a koyim. No, what it means is the other way around. Kosha koyim also lisa as bita. Any case where a koyim is also to marry somebody's daughter, or mind me, what would be such a case? Later on, we're going to have the opinion of Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, who says that if a ger marries a geyurus, their daughter is also to marry a kohen. Now, that's technically not the halacha. However, the Gemara says that the kohenim accepted that as a chumrah on themselves.
A ger marries
a geyurus, so there's no Jewish blood in this child. There's no native Jewish blood in this child. That daughter would be also to marry a kohen, says Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. So now, what we're saying is,
the son can marry
Bat Koyin, yeah, because Bat Koyin doesn't have any Yisur. Right. The Ger himself can marry Bat Koyin, exactly right. That's what Tosfos was just pointing out, So, if a Ger marries a Giyotis, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov says that the daughter is also to marry a Koyin. Nevertheless, Mutorin at end, get Mutorin love is ever. According to Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, that child is also allowed to marry a Mamzer. Again, because the child of a Ger and a Giyotis, therefore that child, in a sense, is still considered a Ger on their own. That's why Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov says that the child is also to marry a Koyin. Well, very well, as a Ger, they're allowed to marry a Mamzer.
There it works.
Yes. Still, the Gemara asks. Any case where a Koyin is also to marry somebody's daughter, then that same daughter would be allowed to marry a Mamzer. Okay. The problem is, Kolahu. Still, is that a general rule? What about the case of a cholol who marries a bat Yisrael? The Koyin also lists a bitter. A Koyin is also to marry the daughter of a cholol, because the daughter of a cholol is a cholola. Halala is not allowed to marry a mamzer. So it doesn't work. The answer is like Kasha, that's not such a problem because could have this story bit of Yehuda. Because you could say that our Mishnah is going like this story bit of Yehuda, the opinion that we had the other day, and again, which the Gemara is going to talk about later on, on Ayin Zayin, that he says that if a cholol marries a bat Yisrael, the child is kosher l'kohona. That the daughter of such a marriage would be allowed to marry a kohen. Very well, then our Mishnah is not so our Mishnah doesn't contradict that rule because such a child is able to marry a Koyin.
Here's
the Tana, yeah.
So our Mishnah would be
according to him, yeah. Okay. How about the Cholol Shanasa Cholola? Fine, but what about the case of Cholol marries a Cholola? The Koyin also lives a bit. There's still the child of a Cholol, or Cholola, and even of this story, but of Yehuda doesn't disagree with that. But also Nami Lov is ever there, and that Cholol or Cholola is still also to marry a Mamzer.
And a
Koyin, right? So still the rule in our Mishnah, if you explain it that way, doesn't work. The two, and not only that, Hol Mutter also, again, by implication, you would say that the Mishnah is implying the other way around. Anybody who a Koyin is allowed to marry his daughter is also to marry a Mamzer. That still doesn't work. But a Ger Shanos a Bat Yisrael, what about a Ger who marries a Bat Yisrael? The Koyin Mutter Lissabika, a Koyin is allowed to marry the daughter of such a marriage. Even Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov doesn't disagree with that because he's talking about the case where both parents are Gerim. Here, the mother is a Bat Yisrael. Yeah. Umutorin love is ever there. And the daughter of such a ger and a bat Yisrael is allowed to marry a mamzer. Or the ger himself is allowed to marry a mamzer, as the case may be. So the rule, there's a converse of the rule, and the Mishnah still doesn't work. El Amr of Nachman Amr Navavaravura. No. We're not talking about Sulei Kohuna. We're not talking about cases involving Koyanim at all. Let's discard that. Hacha. The machloikas in our Mishnah has to do with the two different types of mamzer. It has to do basically what is the definition of a mamzer. Now we learned in Yevamos and we learned off and on in the last dozen or so blocks that we have three or four different definitions among the Tanoim. What's the definition of a mamzer? So our Mishnah is basically reprising that machloikas sort of. You have a case of a mamzer from a man and a sister, which is a chiyuv kares. Then you have a mamzer from an eshes ish, which is an isur mitzvah basin. So the machloket is, which one is considered a mamzer? Tanakama sovra. Tanakama Sava Afilo Mamza Mahoita Nami Habe Mamza. The Tanakama would hold that both cases are considered Mamzerim. So therefore, he would say anybody who is Osir to marry into the congregation, meaning either of these types of Mamzerim, who are Osir to marry a regular Koyan Levi or Yisrael, is mutter to marry among themselves. Such a Mamzer can marry other Mamzerim. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda would say that no, only a mamzer from Eishes Ish, which is a chi of mitzvah based in, would be considered a mamzer. A child from a man and a sister, since it's only an Issa Karis, which is less than Issa mitzvah based in, is not a mamzer. That's what I mean. Rabbi Yehuda would say, this child from a man and a sister who you are claiming, who you tell an Eishes Ish, a sister, an unmarried sister. So Rabbi Yehuda would be saying the Tanakama. This child from a man and a sister, or a man and a... So you, Tanakama, are saying this child is a mamzer, therefore they're allowed to marry other mamzerim. I disagree. I say that child is not a mamzer, therefore he's also to marry mamzerim. That would be what the Mishnah means. Okay, then the question is, my kamash malon, in that case, what's the chiddush of our Mishnah? We learned about that machloekis already in Yavamah. Taneina, we learned it. Ezo mamzer kosher b'lo yoved, divrei Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva had said that a mamzer is anybody born from any union that there's an issur lav on it. Where the Torah says you're not allowed to marry them, including also the cases of a koyin with a grusha, etc. Shimon Atimni, the kosher chayav and all the koris b'deshamayim. Shimon Atimni says any cases where you chayav koris, the halacha kidvarav, and the halacha is like him, which in fact it is. Rabbi Yeshua and the kosher chayav and all the mitzvah based in. Rabbi Yeshua says that anybody who you chayav mitzvah based in. So in other words, the point is, the same way as we had in Amud Aleph, why did we have Avashol's statement in the previous Mishnah when we had Rav Gamliel's statement back in Ksuvos? All the Mishnah needed to say is Avashol agrees with Rav Gamliel. The question is the same kind of thing over here. Why does the Mishnah need to tell us a whole new machlokes? Just say, Rabbi Yehud, just say the Chachamim hold like Shimon Atibni, of the Chachamim of our Mishnah hold like Shimon Atibni, and Rabbi Yehuda holds like Rabbi Yeshua.
So why
does our Mishnah need to reprise the machlokes? So that doesn't work. Ella Omar Rava, so no, Rava gives a fourth answer to explain what our Mishnah means.
That's a proof because...
Then the Mishnah would be repetitious. Yeah. So no, Rava says, Ger Amoniyum Ayobi Iku Benayu. The machloikus between the Chachamim and Rabbi Yehuda in our Mishnah has to do with a Ger from Amoniyum Ayobi. The Hachikamar. So now what the Mishnah means to say is like this. Ko Asurim Lava Bekohol, Umayinihu Ger Amoniyum Ayobi, Mutorim Lava Zebazet. That a ger from Amon or Moyov, where an Amoni is also Adur Asiri, the males generation after generation are also to marry into the body of the Jewish people. They're also to marry regular Bak Toyin, Bak Levi, or Bak Israel.
What
the pasuk says Adur Gam Dur Asiri. It means forever, yeah. An interesting vort I once saw, I think, in the name of the Vilna Gaon, that the vort is after 1,000 generations, you have the original, if you have, let's say, you know, a guy from Amon or Moyer becomes a ger and marries, and then marries, let's say, another Gioris from some other nation or whatever, generation after generation, after 10 generations, you only have 1,000th of the genetics, of 1,024th of the genetics of the baby come from that original ger. You would think that's already bottled on 1,000, the Pasuk is saying still not.
Can't you say then for that?
If you don't know, you were talking about where you know. You were able to trace back the Yisrael. Yeah. So that would be what the Mishnah is saying. Ger Amoni Umayobi, he's not allowed to marry a Bat Yisrael. He is allowed to marry another Gioris or Mamzeris or what have you. Okay, my Rabbi Yehuda, they're fine. And why does Rabbi Yehuda say that they should be also to marry a Mamzeris? The answer is Hachokama. Afal Pishur of Yehuda Oyser Geber Mamzeres. The Mishnah is not necessarily telling us a machloikis. It's telling us that even though Rabbi Yehuda usually says a ger is also to marry a mamzeres, because we have the limud that we said yesterday, Hanimili ger de roi love of a kahal. That only applies to a ger who otherwise would be suitable to enter into the kahal to marry a regular Bat Yisrael.
As opposed to
have a ger ammonium ayavi, the angel in love of a call, an ammonium ayavi ger where he or his male descendants in the male line are never going to be able to, he was saying the same thing as David Bale was saying the other day, there can be a ger from ammon, he just can't marry a Bat Yisrael. He has to marry a mamzeres or yordus or what have you. But what the Mishnah is telling us is when we say Rabbi Yehuda oyser, Rabbi Yehuda, it's not a machloikus in other words. What? What the Mishnah is telling us is as follows. It's not a machloikus between the Chachamim and Rabbi Yehuda. The Mishnah is telling us as follows. a gera monuma ovi is allowed to marry a mamzeres and a sinner or what have you. Rabbi Huda is saying, I agree with that. You should know, even though usually you would think I would disagree, I just hold that a ger is not allowed to marry a mamzeres. However, I make an exception for a ger from Amon or Moav, because anyway they can't marry a regular bat yisrael. So the Mishnah then, according to that, is not telling us two different opinions, it's Rabbi Huda clarifying what his opinion is.
That it's
Ger
from
Ahmed
to marry
Gero? Yes.
But he's a
Goy,
not a
Ger. No, he's a Ger. That's what we're talking about. He's a
Ger. That's
the question. He's accepted in the sense that he's Chayev and all of it. No, he's also Lovei Bakahol, that's all. He's also to marry he's also to marry a Bak Toy and Bak Levi or Bak Israel, but other than that, he's a Ger, yeah.
An interesting concept.
Yeah.
So, but what about the
Gerrit
that
you
marry?
No. The Lashon HaPosuk is, Kahal Hashem. Kahal Hashem is defined as Kohenim, Levim, and Yisraelim, and according to Rabbi Yehuda, generally speaking, also Gerim, except in this case, Rabbi Yehuda makes an exception. So therefore, yeah, so a Gerrit from Ammon is perfectly allowed to marry a Gerrit.
He can be a yid,
just exactly. He's a yid for all purposes. I mean, the same way as a mamzer is a full-fledged yid, except that he can't marry certain people.
How can he be a yid and not be accepted in Kal Hashem?
But you have to understand, what does it mean not accepted in Kal Hashem? Means that there's restrictions on who he can marry. Kohen also has restrictions who he can marry. A mamzer also has restrictions who can marry. I mean, even the 10th generation, no, it means forever. If you know that 50 generations ago your father's father, etc., was a ger from Amun, you would be also love of a call.
Does it mean for him to
be the way? He can be described right away, at least 10 minutes away, and he can literally can't come to college.
Exactly. Right, so a Mitzri has to wait 3 generations and then his children are Mutal of a call. Right. A Mitzri or an Adem. And a Moinu, my Obi, not. Right. Actually, you know, later on I involve on a base, the Gemara is going to discuss the possibility. For example, mentions there's a soldier in David's army called Selaka Amoin. The Gemara asks, because that sounds like it means he was a Ger from Amoin. And the Gemara says, no, actually it means he was a Yid who lived in Amoin. But the point is, the Gemara explains that for a different reason, because the Gemara explains over there that David HaMelech only had people with Yichus in his arms, not Gerim. But the point, if it weren't for that, though, the Gemara would have had no problem with assuming that the guy is a Gerim from Amun. Actually, I'll tell you another example also. In Shmuel Beis, it tells us that the king of Amun, Chonun, what was his name? Nochash Amoni died. His son Chonun took over as the next king of Ammon. David decided, you know what? I owe the Ammonim one because they sheltered my family. At one point, when David was hiding out from Shaul, he sent his family for safekeeping to Moab. The Moabim ended up killing all of them except one brother who got away. That brother escaped to Ammon, and the Ammonim took care of him. So David felt I owe them one. So now, when this Nachash died, David decided, let me send messengers to console, to be Menachem Avil, his son Chonun. Chonun's advisors tell him that what do you think? You know the Jews have the Jews have it in for us. You know it says in their Torah they're not supposed to be friends with us. Why do you think? What are you? David sending a delegation? You think he's doing it for good reasons? He's sending them a spy. So they humiliate them publicly. They shave off half of their beards. They cut their clothes in half, and it becomes a whole war breaks out from that, and everything develops from that, and Ammon ends up getting destroyed. Years later, the pasuk mentions when David is on the run from Absalom, when Absalom was taken over in Yerushalayim, and David is running away, it mentions that there's a character named Shoivi ben Nachash, who came to assist him and give him food and whatever. Who is this Shoivi ben Nachash? Rashi brings to a medrash that it was this Chonun. It was this Chonun who had formerly been the king of Ammon. He had realized what a terrible thing he had done. He became a ger. He was called Shoivi in the sense that he returned to the Eibishter and became a ger. So there you have, in history, an Ammoni, a full-fledged, 100 true blue Ammoni, who became a ger. And he was accepted as a ger. He's not allowed to marry a Bat Yisrael, but he's still accepted as a ger, and he helps out Jabir. He can marry Gerus or Mamzeres, yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, question why he's not considered part of God, if you get.
Because the definition of Kohol is Kohenim, Levim, and Yisraelim, and a form of Yehuda for the most part, Geri. But that's it. That's the definition of Kal Hashem, is that.
And that we know that's from where?
From the Pesukim that we discussed yesterday. They have five times Kohol, or Kohenim, the teaches us of Kohenim, Levim, and Yisraelim, the teaches us about the Sfeikas, etc. Yeah. It was a very controversial thing for a while too. Yeah, they had to prove it over and over. But that was the halacha. That's the halacha of Mishmati. But it means exactly that. No, you're thinking of Loitis Saiv Adjoimi and Loitis Saiv Mitzri. The Gemara talks about over there in Yevamos, the Mishnah talks about, does that apply to female Adjoimios and Mitzrius also? Rav Shimon says no. Rav Shimon says the same way as Ammonius and Mayavi is not, the same way with Mitzrius and Adjoimios. The Chachamim disagree. The Halacha is like the Chachamim. A female Mitzri or Jamie. So it's only Ammon and Moab that there's a difference between men and women. Mitzrayim and Edom, there's no difference between men and women. Yeah.
Any problems in terms of attacking Ammon and Moab?
Well, no, I mean, attacking Ammon and Moab, the issue against attacking them was during the years when they were going in the desert, Kileas and Macha, etc. Afterwards, that's the thing. We have David and his army attacked Moab, they attacked Ammon. Normally, when you're fighting against an enemy nation, you first have to offer them peace terms. In the case of Ammon and Moab, you're not supposed to. You just go attack them straight out. Only during the time when they're wandering in the desert, the Eved Shah tells them, hands off them. Don't bother them while you're passing through. In order that Ruach and Nama can come from them, fine. Doesn't matter. The point is, once they were through those lands, then they were allowed to attack. Yeah. Well, the entire parts of their land. Yeah, that's how they took them over. Yeah.